Welcome to The Forum on 90.5 WCBE. Every week, we bring you the conversation shaping Columbus, straight from the Columbus Metropolitan Club's Wednesday networking luncheons downtown. The Forum is where leaders, thinkers, and community voices come together to tackle the issues that matter most to Central Ohio. Want to be part of the conversation? Tickets and details about upcoming forums are available at columbusmetroclub.org. This week, it's a candid look at the realities facing Black men in Central Ohio. Black men continue to be disproportionately affected by disparities in health, education, and income. We'll explore the realities of navigating mental health stigmas, economic exclusion, and public safety concerns in a powerful conversation about leadership and opportunity. This week, we welcome Jason Jenkins, Chief Diversity Officer for the City of Columbus, Dwayne Pender, partner with McKinsey & Company, and Marshall Schwartz, founder and principal of Artfluential. Your host is Corey Favor, Senior Director of Community Engagement with Orange Barrel Media. Let's dive into this week's Columbus Metro Club Forum, Black Men in Central Ohio, Realities, Resilience, and the Road Ahead.
Let's give it a round of applause for all the brothers in the room. Thank you for showing up. Thank you to all our guests. So good afternoon, everyone. Special shout out to Sophia, Doug, Chris, and the entire CMC team for allowing me to come back to moderate. And I want to thank the audience for your support in these important conversations. And a special shout out to my mom who's watching virtually. Hi, Mom. My lovely wife sent her the link. I was surprised, but I'm glad she's able to be in attendance. I was joking with Doug yesterday and the rest of the fellas about how I appreciate that this conversation isn't during Black History Month. So thank you, CMC, for that. So today we are gathered to explore a question that is both deeply obvious and personal, but profoundly communal. What does it mean to be a Black man in Central Columbus in 2026? Central Ohio is growing rapidly. Opportunities are expanding for some. Yet many Black men continue to navigate disparities in health, education, economic access, and public safety, often while carrying unspoken expectations to be strong, to be sufficient, self-sufficient, and to be sane. As I considered the direction of this conversation and how I wanted to take it, I concluded that this question could not be answered solely by these three gentlemen or by statistics alone. It's a question shaped by lived experience, by systems, by relationships, history, and community. James Baldwin once said, "Not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it's faced." That idea sits at the heart of today's conversation. We're here to unpack uncomfortable realities, to honor resilience, to look honestly at the road ahead. What must change, what must be protected, and what must be collectively built. Today's panelists are bringing their lived experience, their insight, their leadership from across our community. Their voices remind us that Black men are not a monolith, but rather we navigate a shared reality. As we listen, I invite you to do three things. Listen generously, sit with complexity, and just a heads up, we're not going to share all our secrets. So let's get into it, fellas. All right, the first question. What does it truly mean to be a Black man in Central Ohio in 2026 based on your lived experience? And feel free to jump in. Any takers first? Don't be shy.
Good morning, y'all. Thank y'all for being here. This is a lot of pressure, especially with all the brothers in the room. So let me start by saying I won't be foolish and speak on behalf of all the Black men in Central Ohio. I'll speak for myself, and I think that is likely my answer to the question, is that, you know, Black men get to decide what it means to be Black men in Central Ohio today. So on a personal level, I think each of us has a decision to make and choices to make to define what that looks like for individuals. And then there are things that impact us collectively, but I dare not, you know, speak for the whole group, particularly this room. There are a lot of brothers that aren't in this room that couldn't afford the ticket. There are Q-plus brothers in our community that aren't necessarily a part of this conversation all the time. And so I think that's a very complex and broad question that will take a lot of time and a lot of different voices to answer. So, yeah.
All right. I'm going to hit it with one word, hard.
Okay.
We've been fighting all our lives. And so I'm going to rip a page out your book, Marshall. I can't speak for everybody. I can speak for myself, right, as a black man. But I think we have a lot of shared lived experiences, like you would say, Corey, we're not monoliths in any way, shape, or form. We come in different shapes, sizes, backgrounds, sexuality, you name it. But there is something that's key to us that we deal with, mm-hmm. right? We always have to show up better than, right?
Yeah.
We always get under-celebrated
mm-hmm.
when we show up better than.
Yeah.
So I think that's just a consistent. And we don't get the runway to try to improve what we got to walk in the door great mm-hmm. with everything that we need to have, everything that we need to show up. So in my humble opinion, hard, but look at us through all that adversity, through all that. And I'm doing my best not to cuss y'all. They told me, but I speak with passion. I speak from my heart. So mm-hmm. it's hard for me not to use exclamation points in my sentences. It's hard, but I think we are still we are great, we are beautiful, we are proud, we are amazing, right? Through all that, it's still hard.
Yeah. Dwayne.
Yeah, so I appreciate your grounding in the personal, so maybe I'll just start there. So I grew up in Columbus, when I was in eighth grade, we moved from one neighborhood to the next, a difference of 5 miles. So what didn't change in that move was the determination, the interest in school. I always loved school, I loved learning. But what changed was the circumstances. And if you compare the statistics between the high school that I would have went to versus the high school that I did go to, the high school that I went to doubled my chances of going to college and quintupled my chances of graduating from college. And so to me, I think that is illustrative of some of the stories of the folks in this room, is that there's significant motivation, significant desire, significant will, but the systems and structures and circumstances do not support that. And often you see the disparities that are reflective of that. So, you know, as part of my role at McKinsey, I run a think tank called the Institute for Economic Mobility. So I actually study how residents of different races and ethnicities are doing. And what we see in Columbus is, statistically, black men are doing about half as well as white men are in Franklin County. That's across 25 different metrics of education, employment, health, housing, et cetera. But what we also see in the data is that there is no difference in motivation. There's no difference in desire and will. In fact, when you actually look at the statistics, you actually see more motivation in black men relative to the general population. You actually see more belief that their inputs in terms of work will translate into outputs. And so the thing that I think about, you know, to your question, Corey, about how black men are doing from a reality perspective, is the reality is there's nothing wrong with black men. That's just not a personal statement. Those are the facts. And what we need to do as a society, not just locally but globally, is think about how can we build a system and a structure to accelerate the motivations and to support the beliefs and aspirations of black men, because if we do that, we all will be stronger and better.
I appreciate that, Dwayne. And just to stick with the disparities point of your thought, so how do educational disparities, health disparities, economic barriers, and public safety concerns intersect with the everyday lives of black men here?
Yeah, so maybe I'll just make it more specific. So we did a study across the United States, and we basically looked at 25 different metrics of education, health, housing, income, et cetera, and asked the question of, you know, how are black residents doing relative to white residents? And we found that there is no place in the United States where there are no racial disparities. Black folks everywhere experience disparities relative to white residents. In Columbus in particular, the disparities are larger. We are in the bottom 25th percentile of all counties across the country when it comes to the size of our racial disparities. And that extends to the thing I think about transparently is life expectancy. You know, as a father of two kids, life expectancy is a measure not just of how long you live, but how well you live. And so we see disparities not just in terms of maternal mortality, infant mortality. We see disparities when it comes to education levels. We see disparities in terms of healthcare access, healthcare quality. And that all translates to black men in particular living much shorter lives than white men. And you know, the thing I think about often is how can we close those disparities in a way that celebrates the brilliance and resilience of our community, but how do we do so in a fact-based way as well?
To kind of translate some of that, that's why we got him up here. The brother, he knows his numbers. The way I see it, when you talk about disparities in how it deals with black men, we just heard statistically we go harder and go further, right? But we also heard that systematically we are behind by light years. So help me understand how we fight so hard, but yet still fall short. We are equipped. He just said there's nothing wrong with us to be great. So when I look at these disparities, I look at it as a systematic setup. At what point are we going to say no to the systematic setup of black men being held down, being pushed down, being discouraged? Because it's not that we're not equipped. It's not that we're not educated. It's not that we don't have the drive. We've been told that we're lazy and all these other things, but that's not true. So it's not the problem in us. It's in the problem in the systems that have been cooked and baked for over 500 years in this country to not allow us to do the things and be great. So I say we start pushing back on that. So the disparities are cooked and baked and made to hold certain groups of individuals back, particularly black men, and that's the conversation we're having today.
Marshall, did you want to weigh in, or?
All right.
Well, so that brings me to my next question. So we're talking about resilience in a sense, right? So what does resilience look like when it includes honesty, rest, and emotional awareness, not just endurance?
Breathe before that one. I think we're still trying to figure that out. I say personally, you're still trying to figure what that looks like out. I think, you know, when you've had to occupy the space of resilience since birth, often your value has come from your labor, for your willingness to go above, or your the necessity of having to go above and beyond. And so I think if we have the space and opportunity to rest in order to build resilience, that looks like a different kind of masculinity, that looks like a different kind of man, that looks like a different kind of relationship with our communities, with our black women, with our children. And I think, you know, there's a lot to unpack there. Mm-hmm. And so for me, you know, that has been a priority for the last few years, because I could feel it in my body. I can feel it. And it's been very, very difficult to find spaces and times of rest, right? And I'm not saying that's just a black male problem. I think that's a problem in the black community in general. But I think, you know, for men, you know, how we have been socialized is through our labor, through our work, through our ability to kind of show up, to be men, and to grit and bear it. And I wonder if rest will allow us that space to feel and ultimately heal, so that we can also do the work of healing our communities from a harmful system that has systematically, generationally, intergenerationally harmed us, right? Because then that harm gets turned back in on our community from black men, right? And that harms us the most.
Not allowed to rest. We're just not allowed to do it. You know, for black men to rest, you got to have a safe space. And then you also have to have a knowledge of what that looks like for you. And never have we received that information of what rest looks like. I was just commending my brother Almar for going to a beach. toes out. Proud of that brother. Just walked up, said, "Man, Almar, I love you, man. Hey, how was that beach? How did it feel?" Like, because I know he didn't get that when he got back. He probably got work on his desk. His boss didn't say, "Hey, I hope you enjoyed your and maybe they did. I don't know, Almar. You don't have to say whether they did or didn't. I love the fact that you got to keep your job. But no, I don't think we're allowed to rest, nor do we know what that looks like, you know, nor do we allow, like, once you start to introduce that into your life, you know, it's hard to let it go because it brings you that peace. So I'm with Marshall on this journey of trying to learn what that looks like, trying to learn what rest looks like. I'm on vacation, still on my phone, still on my laptop. I think I was in Italy texting President Hightower. You know, I'm just going to be honest. I told you, y'all asked me to come up here.
That's what we
so,
want.
Yeah, I don't think we allowed to rest.
Can I just a quick note. I'm an artist, so my imagination runs wild. I do imagine what it would look like if black men decided to rest as a form of resistance. And that doesn't mean not being productive. That means resting from the systems that we often find ourselves complicit with. Right. What does it look like to then rest and so that we have the energy to rebuild for us and find new avenues and new ways? Because if this is kind of been intergenerational and we are not faring better when it comes to systems, but we are also, you know, participating and complicit with these systems in ways, not always intentionally. But I do imagine, I do wonder what that would look like, right, as a practice, right? And I know that's not, to your point, not feasible, but if we can imagine a world, if we can imagine a city that loves black folk, then black men would be allowed to rest, right? And so, yeah, how do we deliver those black dreams?
If I could just add, so I have two young girls. One is 6 and one is 19 months. And the thing that my biggest aspiration for them, at least in terms of their relationship with me, is that they feel like they are loved for who they are and not what they do. And I think to the points that these two brothers have made, often we enter spaces where we are told that we are defined by what we do. And that has a cost in terms of feeling like you actually have to do twice as much to get half as little. And that shows up in the body. Like the data says that shows up in terms of chronic stress, that shows up in the ability to not be able to sleep, mm-hmm. that shows up in your ability to, when your kids are playing, you're thinking about work because you have to be on Monday, and you're not actually able to enjoy the reason why you work. And these are the stories behind the statistics. This is the reason why the life expectancy gap in the United States between black men and white men is 6 years, is because black men are carrying those things, not just in professional spaces, but in personal spaces. And so, to the point, I don't think it's a nicety to imagine what it looks like for black men to rest. It's actually a necessity.
Yeah. And just to sort of add to that, Dwayne, you know, I came up, you know, originally from New York City, and you know, the great Queensbridge poet Nasir Jones taught me that sleep was the cousin of death.
That's right.
So I stayed hustling and working hard and, you know, neglected my self-care. But let's just stay in this space of rest for black men. Where do you see black men leading or healing in ways that are impactful but often unseen when it comes to rest, self-care? What are some of those spaces that you see now or would like to see when it comes to what we need?
If I can, real quick. I see it in... Now, again, speaking from a personal standpoint, I've tried to create a space where I've allowed my brothers who are closest to me, many who are in the room, my man Chris Sewell, Big Wes, I appreciate all y'all, because they'll text me and be like, "Man, how you doing?" You know, and I'm gonna publicly say this, there are many men in this room that we reach out to each other quietly behind the scenes, having conversation, giving us space to sometimes just cry on the shoulder. I went through something this morning. So, you know, I was trying, personal. So I'm trying to figure out how to deal with that. I just got, give me a second.
Take your time.
I just got back from Florida from seeing my 96-year-old grandmother. I touched down yesterday. I walked into a courtroom this morning dealing with some personal issues. And I walked into this room feeling love. So when I say it's, when you talk about unseen healing, it's these villages that we create, right, amongst ourselves. You're not gonna find that externally. This isn't something that, it needs to be built and considered. How do we build it? Or because it's built organically. There's no structures out there that allow for this. I appreciate the CMC for allowing this conversation, because I hope that from this conversation, there will be structured, intentional structures, not just for Black men, but for Black women, for individuals, our LGBTQ community. Thank you, Shannon Harden, for putting a commission together, because we need these type of structured conversations so people can heal. We are a damaged people, and it wasn't by our hands. Okay? And so the love and those spaces are done organically, but if you don't have the connections that I have and the friends that I have, like Lark Mallory, that reach out to you, then it's really hard to ever heal or to ever even feel that love. And so organically it's done for me personally, but I hope that from this conversation it can be done intentionally through employee resource groups, through other structured commissions in areas where we can have these type of conversations, where we can have a minute and just be our authentic self.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Can't really follow that up.
All right, let's give a round of applause for Jason, man. Thank you. So to that point, Jason, and gentlemen, feel free to dive in. What resources, policies, or community investments are still missing?
Start.
Now or a year ago?
Yeah, it could be now or...
I'm thinking about what you just said, so processing. Maybe I answer your question in a second. I want to call out two of my best friends who are here in the audience, Tim and Derek. We've known each other since college. We have been in each other's weddings. Our kids are best friends. Our wives are best friends. And we live close to each other. The impact that these men have had on me is unspeakable. To the point of having people that you can be vulnerable with, where you don't show up as a person that has a title, but you are your name. To have somebody who you know cares about you, regardless of what you do, that really matters. And I think we don't emphasize how much that matters. So I just want to emphasize the point you made. To the point, so resources and policies. So, you know, Columbus is a place where everyone's talking about artificial intelligence. So I'll just point out that, you know, me and my team has done some research on the effect of artificial intelligence on the labor market, and in particular, the disproportionate impact of artificial intelligence on Black workers. And what we see is that Black men in particular are disproportionately impacted. If you look at the labor market and the way it's structured in terms of the jobs that Black men are more likely to be in, those are the jobs that are more likely to go away in the future because of changing technology. These are the truck drivers. These are your cashiers and your food workers. The people that we see every day that are taking care of us, these are the jobs that are incredibly labor intensive. And these are the jobs that many organizations are looking to use currently available technology to be able to do in a different and more efficient way. So the question is, I do not see enough resources, policies, conversations around the disproportionate impact on artificial intelligence on our community. I don't. Even if I see conversations, I don't see those conversations turning into action. And even if I see some actions, I don't see those actions being done at scale. And I'll just harp a little bit on this community, but not just this community, but our entire society. We do too little at scale. There are so many small pet projects with really good intent that are not scaled. As Jason said, this is a 500-year issue. 500-year issue. And just to put that in a little bit starker terms, we did an analysis and basically said, how long would it take in the Central Ohio region for Black folks to catch up to white folks if you assume white folks are not making any additional progress, right? And you, if you ask that question, you say, based on the past 10 years of work and progress, pre any public policy changes, pre artificial intelligence, the number was 700 years.
Say that again for the people in the back. I don't think they heard that.
So the it would take 700 years to close the racial disparities between Black men and white men, between Black women and white women in the Central Ohio region if we were to do the same things that we have done over the past 10 years. And that is an underestimate. And so we have to do things differently. We have to do things bolder. We have to do things quicker. As much as I love these conversations, I am excited for these conversations to turn into real action so that we are not just admiring the problem, we are making progress against it.
It's interesting what we can do at scale or what we do at scale and what has been taken back at scale, right? We've done mass incarceration at scale. We did a lot of things at scale, right? So we have the we've taken away freedoms and liberties in the last year at scale, and so I think there are things to your point that we can do at scale that we have to have the political will to do, and I think that is an important part of that conversation, right? That's not a program, that's not a summer, you know, budget thing. That's you know that is us willing to do the work and not fold. You know what I mean? And so if you talk to movement spaces, these are some of the conversations that are happening in movement spaces. Like what is happening at scale to folk who, based on class purely, can't be in this room.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I think, you know, that is a great point that hits home for me because we do things at scale. It's just what we choose to do as a society at scale that has the impact.
You're listening to the not-for-profit Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. This week, we're taking a candid look at the realities facing Black men in Central Ohio. This week, we're hearing from Jason Jenkins, Chief Diversity Officer for the City of Columbus, Dwayne Pender, partner with McKinsey & Company, and Marshall Shorts, founder and principal of Artfluential. Your host is Corey Favor, Senior Director of Community Engagement with Orange Barrel Media. We'll get back to this week's Columbus Metro Club Forum, Black Men in Central Ohio, Realities, Resilience, and the Road Ahead, after a short break.
Hello, Columbus, Ohio. This is Dr. Vince Clarino, host of the City League Sports Show, the show where we talk about the past, the present, and future of Columbus City Schools athletics. We're talking weekly on the show about basketball, football, soccer, track and field. You name it, we're talking about it with coaches, players, current and former. Catch us on Saturdays at 8 a.m. on WCBE 90.5 FM.
It is said every album represents a step in an artist's journey. Hey there, music lovers. Tano Jones here of the Tano Jones Revelry. I'm inviting you to listen to Music Journeys with Mike Foley. Mike mixes music and conversation with artists to share what informed and inspired their latest project, how the love of music began, or perhaps what music means to them and so much more. Music Journeys airs Saturday afternoons at 3:30 on WCBE. Recent episodes are available on the major podcast platforms and the WCBE app. To hear more from all the musicians featured since its start in 2018, including me, Tano Jones, look for Music Journeys in WCBE's podcast experience at WCBE.org. You guys be well. Peace.
Welcome back to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. This week, it's a candid look at the realities facing Black men in Central Ohio. This week, we welcome Jason Jenkins, Chief Diversity Officer for the City of Columbus, Dwayne Pender, partner with McKinsey & Company, and Marshall Shorts, founder and principal of Artfluential. Your host is Corey Favor, Senior Director of Community Engagement with Orange Barrel Media. Let's get back to this week's Columbus Metro Club Forum, Black Men in Central Ohio, Realities, Resilience, and the Road Ahead.
I'm just going to touch on real quick what I said earlier around systems. Really evaluating the systems that we're operating in, whether it's public, private, particularly private. I know, at least in the city of Columbus, I don't know about any other city, we have amazing leadership here, in my humble opinion, but I work for them, so here we are. I'm a little biased, but I do believe that even within the systems that I'm connected to, I'm closely connected to within the city government, there, to Marshall's point, it's not being done at scale.
Yeah.
We can go deeper, we can go further, we can push harder, uh-huh. Right? Definitely within the private sector, going deeper, going further, pushing harder, looking at the systems that have been created, again, I want people to really understand what systematic racism is. Systematic racism in its simplest form, it doesn't matter who sits in the seat, black, white, blue, purple, male, female, whatever your sexual orientation is, it doesn't matter who sits in the seat. If you continue to push the same button that keeps people, particularly a certain group of individuals, back, it's systematic. It's in the system. We see it in our procurement processes. We see it within different laws that are structured. It doesn't matter who sits in the seat. That's systematic racism, right? And that's what we're pushing up against. And that's really what we need to root out and identify. And this isn't about being equal. This is about being equitable. For those who have the 700-year plus catch-up, you got to do more. You got to add more for those individuals. This isn't spreading the same wealth across the board. No, it's investing more into those areas so you can close those gaps that Dwayne talked about earlier.
All right. To the point of sort of this current time that we're in and how, Marshall, you made the point of how, you know, with AI and things moving so rapidly and how these changes are systematically affecting us now, I'm curious to how do we protect or prepare the future, our future selves? So how do we better prepare young boys, young black men with tools for emotional health, leadership, economic mobility, or just survival? And what's next?
We need more rooms like this. We need to, and what I mean by that is we need to be in community with each other first and foremost. I think, you know, the racial segregation that exists in the city is also an economic segregation, and that also happens intracommunally, right? So black folks aren't necessarily living next, a certain class of black folks aren't necessarily living next to a certain class of black folk economically anymore as well. And so I think for me, it starts at home. It starts with building community. Everything we talked about earlier around like resilience and rest and what black men need starts with having relationship. And I am talking to black men every day who are starving for relationship and community. So, you know, we're fortunate to have community amongst ourselves, but we need more of that first and foremost. And then we need the city of Columbus to make a commitment to healing this harm and this trauma, right? And I know there are folks in the room who sit in seats and in power, and we all have a responsibility to do that work, not just our public officials, but we have to decide what that looks like for us. So, yeah. And then, you know, I was going to say this a little earlier, and I told Corey I would say this, but one of the things I would love to see is brothers move their hips a little bit more, you know what I mean, and bring some joy into these spaces. And so, yeah, I know that's not necessarily the PC answer, but I do think it's important that we don't dismiss the communal aspect as you started off in this equation, and we can't just solve that the problems just with economics and policy.
Real quick, I'm gonna say two things, and I see a lot of brothers in here that do it professionally, but also do it organically, and it's that mentorship. A lot of brothers in here. I mean, from George Reese to Sharon to Ralph. I mean, a lot of brothers and those who I've missed. Y'all do it professionally. Y'all reach out. Y'all engage our young people on a consistent basis. And I just want to say thank you for that. So please, just grab as many folks as you can. But the one thing I will say that has helped me personally is therapy. I don't think we talk about it enough in our community. It's starting to catch on a little bit more. It's stigma around it. Nobody's like hiding in the closet saying they're going to therapy. I openly go to therapy. I've been going for the last 2.5 years, and I love it. My therapist is a black male as well, because he understands what I'm going through. And he talks me off the ledge frequently. He talked me off the ledge on the way here. It'll be 1,000% transparent. But therapy, man, therapy. I am a believer in it. You know, one thing that I do believe, and I know Doug has gave us the 1 minute warning, so I'm gonna shut up here shortly. You know, something around disrespect. You know, when you take a black man's disrespect him, the level of anger, because we haven't had anything professionally and personally, we get pushed down and pushed to the side no matter how hard you work. So that's what I've been dealing with when I talk to my therapist, is that disrespect. What do you do with that? Where does that come from? Mm-hmm. So I think that anger that you see sometimes with men of color is genuine and it's real. And so how do we make sure that we know how to react in these spaces when those things happen? We do it with each other. So I think one of the things is that mentorship, mm-hmm. but also that therapy is key.
Thank you. As you all know, it's CMC's longstanding tradition to take audience questions. We'll move to questions from our live stream and in-person audiences in just a few minutes. If you have any questions for our panelists, now's the perfect time to head to the microphone. There's Doug over there in the corner. For those joining us on YouTube, just drop your questions in the chat and we'll keep an eye out for them. Before we turn it over to audience questions, I'd like to ask the gentleman one last final question. So what is one truth about black men's lived experience that you would want the audience to better understand today?
First off, before I answer, I'm gonna say my mom's in the crowd. Hi, Mom. I didn't know if I was gonna get another chance to say that.
That's right.
Yeah, look, I didn't wanna get in trouble. I see you did it early, like my mom's watching. One truth, and again, I'm gonna quote you, Corey, on this one. We are not monoliths. Get to know us. Lean in to the black men around you. Get to understand them. We are not monoliths, but we are a special people, 1,000%.
That's a really, I know you sent the questions before. That's a really difficult question to answer. And I still don't have a full answer. I'll say, there's a lot of pressure on this panel. There's a lot of qualified brothers in here that could have sat on this panel other than me. That's not lost on me. And I think the one truth is many truths, and that is, you know, we deserve love, you know what I mean? And we give love, right? If you are looking at a black man, don't categorize us all in one category. And even as I say that, I understand there will be people who leave this room that say, take what we said on this panel and apply that across the board. And that is a part of the pressure that we carry, that we often have to be representative of our whole community. If you see a black man, love on that black man and know that he is carrying that, the weight of his community, with him daily, even if he does not realize that.
Yeah. The thing I'm thinking about from a statistical perspective is black men are miracles. Like, statistically, if you think about the black men who are just in this room, in Columbus, there are so many leaders in different sectors, public, private, social, nonprofit, philanthropic. But you look at the statistics, it is literally miraculous. Miraculous. And the thing I think about is, what if it wasn't so exceptional? Like, I walk into rooms where I would love to not be the only one. I am tired of being exceptional. And I think we need to make it more regular for Black men to be excellent, to have joy, to have rest. Those things should not be exceptions. They should be routine. And so I'm hopeful for the day where it's not so miraculous to see so many Black men in leadership in a particular city.
All right, thank you, fellas. I'm gonna pass it over to Doug. Round of applause for the panelists. I know Doug's at work curating some questions, so take it away, Doug.
Corey, thank you so much, and thank you so much to today's panelists for a very powerful conversation here at CMC. Thank you all. If you do have a question for today's panelists, please do join us here at the microphone. We'll try to get to as many as we can. If you're watching online, type your questions in the chat. We'll try to get to as many of those as we can, too. Great questions at CMC always have two things in common. They can be asked in about 30 seconds or less. And what punctuation mark does a question always end with? They end with question marks. Yes, they do. Thank you, everybody. I'm going to launch us off with this one from the live stream audience. Tasha Booker asks, what does Central Ohio need to do or change to support a thriving Black male?
Another one. Everything.
Could you repeat that, Marshall? For
everything.
Yeah, I think we kind of touched on a couple pieces with that, and thank you, Tasha. Loving on us, patience, but then also where you see a need, when you get to know us, you see gaps, and that's in everyone, right? That's not just in Black men, but that's in human beings. Where can you add support? If it is just a text message like, hey, just checking on you, how you doing, and your well-being. But if it's someone that's thriving to try to get their master's degree, how do you help them in that? So I think it's different for every person of color. I think where you start, though, is just starting with the hello, how are you? And going from there and building that relationship and then finding out where the other needs are.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for your authenticity and courage in sharing today. My name is Kimberly Cole with Ingenious Image. I know a couple of you pretty well. My question is not to take away from the focus of Black men, yet it is to add to the holistic perspective of the impact Black men have on our community. Knowing the disparities plaguing Black men, let's acknowledge that the disparities are even larger for Black women. Black women have been mistreated consistently, often dealing with issues privately that disrupted their lives very publicly. How can Black men and women better support each other with very tangible resources and attention, personally, platonically, and professionally, to elevate and sustain the Black community in Columbus as a whole? And with all honesty, what are you each doing, and how are you using your platforms to strengthen Black women and hold those who mistreat them accountable?
Thank you for that question, Kim. That's my homie. I tried to allude to it earlier because I ain't want to beat up on Black men today, especially not in front of white folk. But, you know, we do have to wrestle with our complicity and the harm that we have often turned on and turned back into our community. And, it's going to sound really tongue-in-cheek, but we definitely need to heal. And that looks like a series of things. And while we're healing, we also have to fight the systems, change the system. So when I say everything, I mean like we really do need to change everything systematically, right? So he talked about doing things at scale. It is not working for us. And we have a room full of pretty successful folk. But you know, the critical mass of us are not doing well. And so that translates into harm often in our own communities against Black women. Historically, I encourage every brother in here to go read some Bell Hooks, The Will to Change, All About Love, right? We also have to do the work of dismantling some of the patriarchal misogyny and harm that we have, which hurts us the most, right? It hurts Black men, and then we in turn hurt our people, not just our women, but our children, our Q+ communities. And so that's the work we have to do as men. So yes, absolutely.
I'm gonna echo that. This is personal healing, and then we can work to heal others. But if you're not healed personally, you can't help anybody else. You're gonna hurt other people. So I think back to that therapy component, and then making sure that when you do start to get that healing, you wrap your arms around others.
And I'll just say from a systems perspective, I think we need to elevate and celebrate the work that black women do in our economy. One of the things that we have seen is that to actually close some of these disparities, early child education is a really important component. It matters for the parents because they're able to work. It matters for the kids because they're able to get to be able to learn to read and to be in school earlier. But the often overlooked aspect is who is doing the child care. It is often black women who are doing that child care, and that work is incredibly important, incredibly vital to our economy. It's often underpaid and overlooked. And so how do we not just celebrate in words, but celebrate in action the work that black women are doing in our economy, and child care is one example.
Sorry, real quick. I do want to, there are men in the room that are, Jason already started, but EPIC, 100 Black Men, I saw some folk from Black Men Build. Like, these are organizations that are doing some of the work, and I know there are, I saw George, there are folks in here, black men in here, who are actually trying to do that work and who are looking at the harm that has happened intracommunally. So I do want to point that out. And if you can support those organizations, I would encourage brothers to join an organization that is doing that work, that is not anti-women, but is looking for ways to include women in our struggle as well.
Just wanted to chime in. Round of applause for the black women that attended the event today in support of black men. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Chris Sewell, humble servant. I just want to say thank you to the good brothers on stage for not only contributing to this meaningful conversation. I know you guys spoke a little bit about this earlier, but my question to you is, what do people often miss about how black men want to be appreciated?
I think that's another one that's, individual to, it's like your love language, right? Like, do you do acts of service, acts of kindness? I think to start, it's getting to know the individual. I think that's where everything starts. It starts with that hello, how are you, and in a way, a genuine way. I don't think there's really one blanketed answer at that. Like I said earlier, I think there are expectations of black men in certain spaces, at home, personally, as well as professionally, and we gotta get rid of those expectations. We got to get rid of those stereotypes. We got to dispel those myths, because the standards and the appreciation, they don't equal out in any way, shape, or form. So I think first, if on a personal level, it's getting to know that individual and seeing what they need and filling the gaps in it where you can. But on a more broader scope, it's knowing that there's a belief that's out there about black men and not feeding into that belief.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you for your comments and advice. My name is Chandler James of the Now Foundation. As a young man in the room, my question more comes to scalability. You all spoke about the lack of scalability in our community and ventures and organizations. Can you talk to some examples you've seen of people who have been able to do that, but then also speak to what we are missing in that scalability opportunity?
We didn't say there was a lack of. We said there was a lack of will. I don't think you missed any words about it's not a lack of scalability, because like Marshall said, the country has scaled. They scaled all kind of stuff. It's where do they want to scale, right? And so, I don't think there's a lack of it. I just think that there's a lack of will and from individuals with influence in certain areas.
Also be aware of the danger of when you say you're going to do that work, what happens, right? Who does that scalability become a threat to, and who seeks to dismantle that? And we've seen it throughout history where black communities have scaled solutions for ourselves, and it has been destroyed violently. And so we cannot discount what that means, right? Which means we have to prepare ourselves for that part of it as well. I think something that comes to mind, and I don't know the ins and out of it, but what the mayor of Baltimore is doing to reduce crime in the city of Baltimore by empowering community workers, paying them to help be interventionists on streets has reduced crime, and the statistics have shown that. And it's something that's really been intriguing to me to kind of look at harm reduction at scale in a city that is, you know, notoriously known for, you know, crime in the neighborhood, right? And they're doing that through gang intervention, through arts, through a lot of the stuff we say we, you know, we kind of put on make it ornamental. But they are empowering folks to find solutions and design communities for themselves and making them a part of the process. So I think that you know, is one example that comes to mind.
Fadon Bailey, Otterbein University. I appreciate all the free game and perspective you guys gave up there. But one of my questions is that you guys mentioned was self-defined, self-definition. What is your definition of manhood, and what do you let influence and not influence your personal definition?
That's the last question, Doug.
Goodness gracious.
You see, you went to Otterbein, my alma mater. I'm just saying, that's what we do. We ask them tough questions.
I'll end where I started. You get to define what that means for you. Where's the young man? Oh, yeah, you get to design. Spent a lot of time at Otterbein in college. Didn't go there, though. But you get to define what that. I have a son that's in college now, and I tell him that every day. You know, that you get to define what that looks like for. I can't live your life for you, right? There are many ways to be a man in this world, right? And that ultimately is the sum of our decision and choices. And so, what does that look like for you when you enter the room? Are you building? Are you destroying? Are you lifting it up? Are you leaving it better than when you came? Right. I'm not getting into, you know, the masculinity, how tough you are, who you can beat up, all of that stuff, because that don't much matter to me, you know what I mean? But you get to define what that looks like for you.
I'm scared of that question, you know? I'm scared of that question. No, I echo Marshall. Yeah, I echo Marshall 1,000%.
Why?
Well, round of applause for these amazing panelists. I really wish we had more time, fellas, but it is my goal and my hope that this is the start of a conversation community-wide, that brothers are more connected in community, that these discussions don't end here, but they just really start. This is just the beginning. So thank you, CMC, for this platform. Thank you for the opportunity to bring me back to moderate. I greatly appreciate it. Thank you, brothers, for letting me hold court with you. And that's about it. So I'm going to bring up Matt Barnes now to close us out. And in the words of my favorite actor, Denzel Washington, I'll see you at work. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. Disparities in health, education, and income continue to shape the lives of Black men across Central Ohio. But today's conversation centered on resilience, leadership, and the work underway to expand opportunity and change outcomes. This week, we welcome Jason Jenkins, Chief Diversity Officer for the City of Columbus, Dwayne Pinder, partner with McKinsey & Company, and Marshall Schwartz, founder and principal of Artfluential. Your host was Corey Favor with Orange Barrel Media. This forum was sponsored by Otterbein University and by McKinsey & Company. The presenting sponsor of our live stream was the Center for Human Kindness at the Columbus Foundation. Our live stream partner was the Columbus Dispatch. This forum was also supported by Downtown Columbus Incorporated and the National Veterans Memorial and Museum. If you'd like to keep exploring this week's forum topic, our friends at the Columbus Metropolitan Library recommend reading The Invisible Ache, Black Men Identifying Their Pain and Reclaiming Their Power by Courtney Vance. Join us next week as the not-for-profit Columbus Metropolitan Club once again connects people and ideas through community conversation. I hope you'll join us. I'm Doug Buchanan. Thanks for listening.